I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Just ahead, most people want to do right by their loved ones when it comes time to say their final goodbyes, but what if you've lost touch with the rituals of your faith? That's where the Shiva Sisters come in, and we'll tell you about them in just a few minutes. But first, it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in their chairs for a shape-up this week are author Jimmy Israel, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, Republican strategist Ron Christie, and author and editor and civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar is doing a slow roll, and he'll join us when he can. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas.
What's
Welcome
up?
Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Doing good,
good.
Man.
RC, my man, good to see you. The R.
Hey, the man. R's in the house.
In the house. Well, you know
what?
I'm
in New Mexico. Happy to join you.
All right. Well, let's get it on. So up first, the controversial execution of Troy Davis, the Georgia death row inmate, was executed this week for the 1989 shooting death of off-duty police officer Mark McPhail. Now, Davis maintained his innocence over the years and garnered thousands of supporters from Democratic and Republican congressmen to former presidents. Now, many of them argued his innocence due to lack of physical evidence, Michelle.
Well, you know, I think I would edit that, Jimmy, to say that, you know, I don't know that they were arguing that he was innocent. What they were arguing was that the state did not meet its burden. And when you're going to impose the ultimate penalty, that it is very important that the state meet its burden. The critical argument here was that 7 of the 9 trial witnesses recanted their testimony, several saying that they had been coerced. I'll just give you a short clip of some of the flavor of what some of the discussion was around this. Reverend Al Sharpton was outside the prison where Davis was executed, and this is one of the things that he had to say.
This is an egregious and outrageous miscarriage of justice, and we're here to say that. We're also here to begin a move to make sure that we make it illegal anywhere in this country for people to face a death sentence only based on eyewitness testimony.
Oh, wow. Thanks for that, Michelle. Now, Davis had his sentence carried out while the death sentence of Samuel David Crow in Georgia, who had actually admitted to killing a retail lumber manager, it was commuted. So it's kind of an apples-to-apples comparison, except Crow admitted his guilt, and Davis maintained his innocence until the last. Now, wow, yeah.
So Ruben, what do you think about this?
So is that the first time in recorded history that someone convicted of a crime has ever maintained his innocence?
Right. Well, your point the, is?
Yeah, what's
that's
the point?
That's the point. As the son of a cop, as someone who has had various jobs in the criminal justice system, intern for district attorneys and the like over the time, it's not unusual for people who are even convicted of crimes to always say they didn't do it. That's not, you know, I'm just making that point. I think the issue in Texas and the issue in this particular case is that there is kind of a worrisome, vengeful, bloodthirsty aspect to our politics as relate to the death penalty. And it's very difficult sometimes to separate out the justice, if you want to call it that, of meting out the ultimate punishment in some cases. I think the picture-perfect poster boy for the death penalty in this country was Timothy McVeigh. If you take a look at what happened in Oklahoma City, if he didn't deserve the death penalty, nobody does. And I have no problem in my support of the death penalty, but I will tell you this. Those 5 years I spent in Dallas, Texas, really did have an impact on me in terms of watching a state that sometimes pushes this too far and sometimes mixes in issues of race, for instance, in the way that they coach jurors, in the way that prosecutors exclude jurors of certain backgrounds. Texas is a whole different ballgame, and it's very worrisome. It's very troubling. You just do not execute record numbers of people like that unless somebody is cutting corners.
What's that you say? Race matters? Clutch
yes.
the pearls.
Shocking.
RC, weigh in here.
You know, this case is very troubling in a number of aspects. For one, you know, as one of the lawyers in the group, and Arsalan will join us in a little bit, you have to say to yourself, can you not only convict, but can you execute someone based strictly on eyewitness testimony? And the Supreme Court of the United States has ultimately ruled in this particular case that, yes, you can. I'm troubled by the fact that you have 7 of the 9 eyewitnesses who have either recanted their testimony or have indicated that they felt coached or coerced. That's the case, it seems to me that there should have been an additional review, there should have been an additional repeal, and you should have put these folks right back on the stand to say specifically, how were you coerced, how were you coached, and is this a proper administration of justice or a travesty of it? So that's the aspect that I'm rather troubled by.
You know, Arsalan's here. I wanted to ask him a question here, since you're the attorney in the group. Ron, are you an attorney also? I forget.
I am.
You are an attorney also. But
as he pops his collar.
But, yeah. but Arsalan, you've worked on, you know, you are a civil rights attorney by training. One of the questions I had is just, why didn't the Supreme Court at one point did review this case, but they didn't order a new trial. Why not order a new trial?
They obviously felt as though, you know, there was a preponderance of evidence to allow, you know, even the 7 of 9 witnesses who recanted their statements, they felt that there was still, you know, a preponderance of evidence to uphold the conviction. Now, I completely agree with Ron that, you know, when, you know, 7 out of 9, when 78% of the witnesses in the case have recanted their statements, and even the 2 remaining witnesses, you know, a lot of their testimony was considered hearsay evidence. You know, I think it really does speak to the broken death penalty system that we have in the U.S.
There's only one thing I wanted to say about the media in this case. This is one of those cases that got a lot of media attention. But one of the things that disturbs me about cases like this is the narrative line at some point inevitably turns to kind of the worthiness of the accused life versus the worthiness of the victim's life. And the victim's life was indeed worthy, but that isn't the question. You know, that isn't the issue. And how much his family suffered at his loss, which, of course, you know, they suffered. And certainly, as, you know, Ruben just went, you know, I have many police officers in my family. And, of course, every time they walk out the door, you're hoping that they will come back, whether they're working on duty or whether they're working in security or anything, you know, of that sort. But to continually sort of press this line about the, kind of the worthiness of the victim's life has nothing to do with whether the person who is accused is indeed responsible. And so that's the piece I just wish that I just don't understand why the media continues with this sort of this trope in this kind of false equivalency. Go ahead.
Michelle, you know the thing that troubles me, and I'm not going to win any fans by saying this, but it's the idea that, you know, people are ranting and raving, oh, the system's racist, the system's racist. Really? Water's still wet. Now, as far as I know, you know, if you know the system's racist, you stay out of the system. If you roll it with some cats and all of a sudden a beef breaks out and one of them starts shooting, guess what? It's time to change your plans for that evening. It's not time to keep rolling with them to see what other kind of mischief they're going to get you into. You know what I'm saying? So if
Jimmy,
you want to stay,
yeah.
Hold on a second. If you want to stay out of this, if you don't want to be in the system, which you know is racist from jump, don't get in the system. It seems reasonable to me. So I don't know. Like I said, that's not going to win me any fans, but
I think that's a point worth saying. But that doesn't change the fact that in the United States, there is a system of justice that places the burden of proof on the government. And if the government's going to impose, that is the issue at stake here.
Well, and also, you know, in the case of Georgia, you know, they have a 5-member panel that decides on whether or not to grant clemency. And out of the 5, two out of the 5, including the chairman, are African American. And so, you know, again, I think here it is more about the brokenness of the system. I mean, we're really the only country in the Western industrialized world that still has the death penalty. You know, most of Western Europe has, you know, completely abolished it, you know, as of 1981. And so I think it really goes to looking at the systemic failures of our death penalty experiment here in the United States.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to our weekly barbershop segment. We're joined by author Jimmy Israel, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, Republican strategist Ron Christie, and Arsalan Iftikhar decided to join us. We're so glad. So back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks. Well, the death penalty came up again at the GOP debates in Orlando. While 34 of the 50 states still have the death penalty, the great state of Texas has performed the most. 236 of those occurred under Rick Perry's governorship, Michelle.
Yeah, I'm interested in what you all think about this. Rick Perry, the audience that he was before last night, that wasn't exactly a problem for them. I think that has to be said. But it was a very interesting debate in terms of what got people's attention and what how they played to that particular audience. Rick Perry was under fire from fellow candidates last night. He and Mitt Romney were sparring. And I'll just play a couple of clips just to give you a sense of kind of the atmosphere there. Here it is.
I think Americans just don't know sometimes which Mitt Romney they're dealing with. Is it the Mitt Romney that was on the side of against the Second Amendment before he was for the Second Amendment? Was it was before he was before these social programs from the standpoint of he was for standing up for Roe versus Wade before he was against Roe versus Wade?
There's a Rick Perry out there that's saying that the federal government shouldn't be in the pension business, that it's unconstitutional. Unconstitutional, and it should be returned to the states. So you better find that Rick Perry and get him to stop saying that.
See, Rick Perry and I must be having the same day in terms of getting our words out.
Dog the Bounty Hunter is right on that. He's looking
for that.
These
are professional communicators, folks. Yeah,
I know.
Exactly right.
We must have gotten our Dunkin' Donuts coffee at the same shop, right?
It's well, Mitt Romney, too. I mean, Lord, help these people.
Ruben?
Get those words out.
More?
Yeah, I think that this issue, I mean, it's a way of getting at the front runner, you know, going after him on various aspects of it. I don't think the death penalty thing is a fair I don't think the death penalty is a fair charge against Perry, because having lived again in Texas, I can't tell you the number of times we would sit down for candidate interviews for people who came down to the Dallas Morning News editorial board for an endorsement, and they were running for judge. And they made it very prominent in their literature and what they told us, that they supported the death penalty. It was almost a sick contest in terms of how enthusiastic they could be for the death penalty. And many of those people were Democrats. Understand this. In Texas, Democrats are just as much in favor of the death penalty as Republicans. It's not a blue thing or a red mm-hmm. thing. It's a Texas thing.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. was this, Ron, do you think that tell me what you think happened in this debate. Do you feel that we got anywhere with sort of seeing what the candidates really stand for? What do you think?
Well, I tell you, I think these debates are happening way too early. You know, everyone's already got the horse race out and who's winning, who's losing. I thought Governor Romney looked good last night. He didn't have any major gaffes. I thought Governor Perry's folks were probably wishing that the debate was 1 hour in length as opposed to two. It looked like Perry was a little bored. He looked like he lost some steam in the second hour. And frankly, if you're going to make a horse race of this, it's who's running for third place? And in my book, I think Senator Rick Santorum, frankly, outshone the rest of the field, you know, other than obviously the top two tier candidates. And at this point, it's who can edge out the other candidates on the stage to start raising a little bit more money to stay viable for the next several months.
Well, isn't it really a race for vice president at this point with the rest of the tier? I mean, really?
Oh, I don't know.
You don't think so?
I think Tim Pawlenty – well, I think there's merit to what you had to say, but I think Tim Pawlenty, for getting out as early as he did and endorsing Romney as quickly as he did, thought, hey, I'm going to start the Veep sweepstakes. I want to be the first guy to be
right.
considered.
Right.
Well, and, you know, for me, what's interesting to note with the whole, you know, GOP field is, you know, this whole concept of horse race. I think it's actually more important right now, at least, like Ron said, you know, it's so early in the race. I think it's actually more important to be, you know, the second horse in the race right now as opposed to the front runner, because I think that, you know, as long as Rick Perry can just keep like a nose length behind Romney, he'll, you know, be able to take
in front of Romney.
No, behind Romney in terms of the establishment candidate. Oh. I think when you get to the home stretch, that's when Perry will be able to, you know, go forward. It's interesting, you know, he talks about Romney being this before being that. You know, most people forget that Rick Perry was a Democrat before he was a Republican. So that's something important to keep in mind.
Well, while we're talking about this whole question of, you know, can't cross the finish line.
Right.
Well, not a presidential candidate. Joe Scarborough, the former Republican congressman from Florida and host of MSNBC's hit morning show, it's called Morning Joe, wrote this column for Politico that got a lot of attention comparing President Obama to LeBron James. He says the president always slips to the side of the court when his teammates need him most. He says that President Obama allowed former Democratic Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, to carry the heavy load on health care reform. The data is not new, but this comparison of Obama to LeBron seems to have kind of stung in a way. Does that sound right to you? Jimmy, what do you think? You're the Cleveland man. What do you think? Resonate? And why do you think it's sort of that charge seems to be getting some traction?
It does.
I think that thesis is flawed because it I don't know. I just don't dig it. It doesn't go anywhere for me. You know, Barack Obama reminds me more of a Harlem Globetrotter. He's kind of a lot of show, a lot of rhetorical backspins, but, you know, he's hard pressed to make any game changing decisions at the point when faced with any real opposition. I think that comparison is more apropos than comparing it to LeBron James. LeBron, and you know, Joe should stay in his lane on this one.
No, so. Right. Arsalan says, Arsalan's like, excuse me. Go
no,
ahead.
I think, you know, for once, Joe Scarborough is right. You know, I think that both, if you look at LeBron James from the NBA perspective, Barack Obama from the political perspective, you know, they were both seen as forces of nature, you know, that would be able to, you know, completely change paradigms. And I think that both of them have sort of been weighed under their inability to, quote unquote, win. You know, LBJ, you know, with his inability to beat the Dallas Mavericks in the NBA Finals when everybody thinks that he's the greatest player on the planet. I think similarly, you know, because Barack Obama, you know, has really been unable to win in so many different regards, I think he's been sort of, you know, weighed under like LeBron, you know, in terms of his own greatness and his own inability to win.
Ron,
but don't forget, fellas, don't forget that the LeBron comparison came from one Senator Barack Obama himself. If you believe the book Game Change written by Mark Halperin, he allegedly said during the 2004 Democratic presidential convention, right. He said to Harry Reid, hey, baby, I'm like LeBron. I got game. So I just think that Scarborough was remembering, you know, back what Senator Obama comparing himself to LeBron James.
I think it's a silly comparison, and I think that LeBron James is going to have a much longer career than Barack Obama.
Ouch.
Really?
Ouch.
Okay, well, we have it on tape. We will be playing this for you.
Yeah, November 2012, baby.
We got it on tape. We will see. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book The Denzel Principle. He was with us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the Washington Post Writers Group, Latino Magazine, and Pajamas Media. He was with us from member station KANW in Albuquerque. Ron Christie is a Republican strategist, a former aide to President George W. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney. He was with us from Boston. And Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney. He's author of the newly released book, Islamic Pacifism, Global Muslims in the Post-Osama Era, and he was here with us in Washington, D.C. Thanks, everybody.
Peace.
Peace out.
Thank you.
Yep, yep.